Hello and welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for 2018. My name's Michael Laminato and this is the 2018 F1 preseason. Winter testing is over and the teams are freshly arrived in Australia ready for the first race. What can we expect the competitive order to look like this year? To help unpack the timing data from 8 days of Barcelona testing is Andrew Phillips from F1 Metrics. Andrew, how are you doing?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's an interesting time to be in this sort of field, to be analysing the pre-season numbers, because realistically, between pre-season testing and round one, there's nothing happening other than to speculate and hypothesise what we might be doing. And that's, I suppose, using numbers far more, realistic than anything I would just sort of make up by looking at lap times, is what your blog is all about. So, first of all, I guess, tell us a little bit about your background and how this blog started.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've been an F1 fan for a really long time. Going back to the early 90s, I was an Ayrton Senna fan. And I've always been sort of into quantitative modeling, you know, statistical approaches to data. So analyzing F1 inevitably became a big hobby for me. And at some point I thought, well, since I'm doing it anyway for my own amusement, I might as well put it up on a blog. And it's gotten a bit more exposure than I would have initially expected.
It's interesting because there is so much information in Formula One, and it's not always expressed that well. You know, I mean, it's a struggle. Most people watch Formula One through the television, obviously, and there's only so much information you can get across on television. But it's always surprised me a little bit that a lot of the statistics and the data from Formula One isn't used more to engage with fans, I suppose, which is a gap you've identified and done really well with. Are you surprised that so much of this information isn't used by very many people?
Yeah, I think there are two sides to that. I mean, one is it's a hugely data-driven sport, but a lot of that is done confidentially by the teams for their own benefit. So although there's an enormous amount of analysis going on, much of it more sophisticated than what I'm doing with the data I can get to hand, it's not ever being shown to the fans or even disclosed to the other teams. So we kind of miss out there. And I think with respect to the broadcast, I mean, there's a huge opportunity for using even fairly simple statistics in infographics, in visualization of what's happening, you know, showing different drivers' lines on different laps, things like this that we're just not seeing yet in Formula One.
Yeah, it is a good point. It's something that I think a lot of people have speculated that might change now that Formula One has American owners over the commercial rights, and it's such a big part of US sport. To have the statistical approach, and they're also able to use sort of the history that Formula One has. Do you expect this to become more part of it? Is that something that you might be, I mean, you're already pushing it with the blog, I suppose, but you're pushing to a wider audience now?
I think so. I think it's a good way to engage fans, especially because, you know, at first glance, F1 isn't necessarily interesting to a novice. A lot of it is subtlety. And unless you understand the strategy, unless you understand the stories that are playing out during a race, it can just look like cars going round and round in circles. So, you know, if you can actually start to show some of the more subtle stuff that's going on, as they have done in other sports, I think that's one way of engaging viewers. And it really does suit F1, in which you do often have down periods of a race where you could be presenting that type of information.
It is. It is really interesting. And I'd hope that at least, I mean, pre-season testing is an interesting time for that because you do get a lot of the preliminary data. And I wonder if that's something that might actually happen this year. We know we've been talking about, or the commercial rights holders supposedly talking about, taking breaks during races in the sense that, as you say, those quieter times, they have highlights packages and maybe additional information. So something hopefully that we can look forward to in Formula One. But for now, we have just the standard way of going about it, analysing the numbers amongst ourselves, which is absolutely fine, I think. There's a lot of different ways you can slice numbers, and certainly lap times and all the kind of information Formula One does provide. But in particular, your analysis of pre-season testing, which is available on your website for 2018, what's the way you go about it? What's the way you find most instructive when you're trying to form a picture of the competitive order?
I think the essential thing is looking at long runs. There's not a whole lot of sense in looking at single lap times because on any single lap, we don't know the engine mode. We don't know how hard the driver was pushing. We don't know if they backed off in one part of the lap necessarily. So just looking at single lap times often will give you completely the wrong hierarchy. So the key, I think, is piecing together many long runs for each given team. Because although, you know, one long run isn't going to tell you the whole story, if you have enough data on a team, you can start to get some quite strong constraints on where their actual pace is. that there are limits on how much or how little fuel they could have had in the car. And when you combine that with cases of race simulations, where they ran connected stints without any addition of fuel, you can get a pretty firm picture of the competitive order.
What I think is really interesting is that last year you had the opportunity, of course, to look back on the season and your article from this time last year where you looked at pre-season testing. Are you surprised how accurate sometimes it is? Like, I think last year your prediction was that Ferrari and Mercedes would be too close to call, which was, well, it was exactly correct in the end. Were it not for some decision-making on Sebastian Vettel's part in the cockpit?
Well, I think the critical point last year was most of the sort of main analyses that were in the media were based on comparing a Mercedes race stint from the first test with a Ferrari race simulation from the second test, where conditions were quite different. Teams are usually ramping up performance across the testing, so that wasn't really a fair comparison. And when you corrected for that, it did indeed look as though it would be too close to call. This year, we're actually, in a way, we're helped by the horrible weather in the first test, because it means the second test was just packed with race simulations from many teams, all in fairly similar conditions.
And that does count a lot for a lot. We've been talking over the last couple of weeks. The conditions really do count for a lot in preseason testing because they're not always representative. Certainly the first test, as you said, I mean, snow is not representative for Formula One. Do you find on the numbers that you do get and when you look at them over the course of a season that there is either improvement or some degree of misunderstanding given that, I mean, for example, in this preseason testing, tyre warm-up was a major problem, which ought not be the case for most of the rest of the year, considering it's usually summer conditions they're racing in.
Oh, exactly. You will see differences between tracks and weather conditions across the year, so it's not going to be completely representative. And moreover, teams are going to, tack on huge performance upgrades across the year. So things aren't going to remain static. Any estimate we make now, even if it were perfect, isn't going to forecast the whole season. And I can tell you, looking at the first 4 days of testing this time, I ran my normal analysis and I basically had to throw it out because the data were just so abnormal. You know, even on long stints, you were seeing times just getting quicker and quicker, often by half a second a lap, because the tyres were still warming up even 10 laps into a stint.
Extremely unusual conditions for Formula One, even for Pirelli, as much as people might criticise Pirelli's tyres. If we do look at what we were able to glean from pre-season testing, like we said, this time last year, the picture was too close to call between Mercedes and Ferrari. I think at a minimum, people would have been hoping for a continuation of that, if not for Red Bull Racing to join that. But I don't know if the numbers really show that, do they?
I don't think it looks that way. And that's possibly because, the new Mercedes looks very much a refinement of last year's concept, whereas Ferrari seemed to have decided to, go a different direction this year from last year. So it's probably going to take them time to really fully understand their new car and get the maximum out of it.
And one of the interesting things that your analysis pulled up, and it was one of those sort of foreboding moments, was a long run by Valtteri Bottas. Now, we'll talk briefly about headline times a little bit later on, as much as they're not really that useful, and especially when Ferrari does them, because we know Ferrari likes to have one of their, low fuel glory runs.
I mean, it's still fun when records get broken, isn't it?
Yeah, and can you imagine what it's going to be like when they get there in this proper summertime when they'll have real conditions to try and test them on? But there was this stint by Valtteri Bottas. It sort of probably seemed innocuous at the time, but an extremely powerful one on the medium tyres, I think, because that was the preferred tyre for Mercedes during testing, that sort of suggests that there could be a lot, way much more to come from this Mercedes car than most people thought, even on the basis of this sort of under-key testing.
Yeah, if you look back to last year's testing, there was again a similar run. It kind of went under the radar because it wasn't setting any record lap times, but the consistency and the pace of the stint, and given the tyre compound it was on, it's very concerning.
Concerning is the word you never want to hear in pre-season testing. Not when we're trying to build up the season, but you do never know. It's always the sort of thing. You don't know what cars are holding back, but I suppose that's one of the things about analysing long runs in particular, is that it is harder for teams to hide what they're doing, I suppose, because like you said at the start, there's only so much fuel you can put in a car and that kind of thing. So, I mean, do we say at this point, let's try and be a little bit optimistic.
Yes.
How close will Ferrari be, or Red Bull Racing, do you think, to Mercedes at round one, where presumably the performance won't be too much different from pre-season testing, only 2 weeks between them?
If we go purely by testing, I would estimate about half a second on the medium. If we look on the soft compound, I think maybe the advantage is a bit smaller than that. Ferrari might be within 0.3 of Mercedes.
Which is a continuation of the things we've seen in the last couple of years, isn't it? And Mercedes does tend to prefer those harder tyres, even going back to before they were winning championships, tyre wear was one of their weaknesses, I suppose. I don't know if we can still necessarily use the word weakness for Mercedes, but a lesser strength, perhaps.
A relative, yes, exactly. I guess we can hope that on super soft, ultra soft or hyper soft, and some of those compounds may see a lot of strategic running this year. Maybe the Mercedes isn't as strong. We didn't see as much of them on those compounds. They did the usual thing of running a lot on the mediums. So we can hope that, you know, that was playing to their strengths and they're not perhaps as strong on the softer compounds.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you say, I mean, we've got so many soft compounds now. We've got three different tyres. No, we've got four tyres with the word soft in them this year.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a little window of hope there. But if we do look at Red Bull Racing and Ferrari, which seems to be the battle for second, these teams look much closer, which potentially is a good situation considering that we think they should have at this stage different strengths and weaknesses between them.
Yeah, agreed. So that could be a real tussle. You know, if Red Bull are sort of superior on higher downforce tracks, you know, supposing that the Renault is relatively a weaker engine than the Ferrari, that could be very interesting, in much the same way as the Mercedes and the Ferrari had different characteristics last year.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was interesting. I think there was some GPS data reported in the media in the last couple of weeks that suggested that even though Red Bull Racing wasn't able to complete the fastest time of testing, I think they were third fastest behind Ferrari and McLaren, which we'll talk about momentarily, which was an interesting one, they were apparently faster in all of the corners, which really does... So yeah, it really does suggest that they've certainly got their expected strength down this year, and maybe really does talk about how far behind that Renault engine might be.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of positive signs for the Red Bull chassis. Like, there was that stat posted, although, you know, I'd always like to know under what conditions, on what tyres, you know, perhaps that isn't always true on every lap. But, you know, in additionally, people who are on site at the track have been saying, you know, the Red Bull does look very strong.
Which, we all would have expected. Well, we all expected it last year, I suppose. And, I mean, it was still pretty good last year, but it wasn't quite up there yet. It is the question of the power units. And I suppose it's interesting as well, because that means the top three teams are all running different power units, which will make... I mean, that's sort of the ideal situation for Formula One in some respects, isn't it? Where you've got, and we did see this last year, teams competing potentially for wins, notwithstanding maybe Mercedes' advantage, but with different strengths and weaknesses that they're able to capitalize on and exploit in each other.
Exactly. I mean, that's what makes for a great season. Like, if you look back to 2003, for example, you know, where you had Williams, Ferrari and McLaren, all with different strengths, all competing for the title. That is a classic season. So that's what we always hope for, I think. And I think the big question is how much were Renault holding back in testing? You know, if they have another half second in hand, then we're in for a classic title race. And there is, I mean, there are sort of rumours coming out that Renault were running in sort of a compromised state for a lot of testing, that they were focusing on reliability given all the issues they had at the end of last year. So if there's some performance in hand, that's great. I mean, of course, that has to be balanced against can they deliver that performance without all the reliability issues that they had last year.
Mm-hmm. Especially considering they're using fewer power units this season, only three for the entire year, although... Renault Honda, in the light of their preseason testing, maybe not as surprising as we would otherwise have thought, but both have talked about the idea of strategic engine penalties, if not just because running these power units over so many kilometers would naturally lead them to just produce less power by the end of the cycle.
Yeah, exactly. That may actually be the optimal solution for pretty much everyone except Mercedes.
I can't believe after all these years, we're still talking about them in such exceptional terms, but that's the way it is.
What I worry is that we may have a 2004, you know, where we had 2003 look like a glimpse of hope. And then we were back to Ferrari domination the year after.
It is impressive at that stage, isn't it? Because, I mean, that would arguably, or I think actually certainly be more impressive than when Mercedes simply came out of the blocks with new regulations, or the new power unit in particular, and dominated, because we know typically that happens after regulation changes. But the fact that it seemed everyone was closing up so much last year, even Red Bull Racing won a couple of races last year, for them to then pull back out... I mean, as Formula One fans, as much as you want to see competition, that's the impressive thing.
It would be impressive, at least in retrospect. I don't know if viewers would enjoy it in the moment.
Well, we'll talk again at the end of the season, and we can talk about it in positive terms at that point. One of the interesting stories of pre-season was always going to be McLaren, and they've changed to the Renault power unit now after some miserable times with Honda. And the thing, you could even tell this was coming from the end of last season and right through the off season in some respects, because they made no effort to moderate or temper expectations. All the end of last season, and all through the off season, they're talking about how their car was just as good, if not better, than Red Bull's, if only they had the same engine. I think Zach Brown says he was giggling with excitement at the prospect of this year, and yet they completed the fewest laps of preseason testing due to unreliability, partly due to Renault and partly due to themselves. Other than the fact they have so few laps, what does the data say about their performance? Because they seem to really be lost amongst everything. It was only that last lap by Fernando Alonso in the last hour of preseason testing that actually grabbed them a couple of positive headlines.
So, yes, I mean, clearly it was a somewhat painful test for McLaren in terms of reliability. I think in terms of pace, they're not looking too bad. I would put them about level with Renault on the long runs they did, and that would be fairly consistent with the time gap to Ferrari that we saw also on their glory run at the end of the test. So I don't really see them in the mix with the top three teams at the moment. Again, you know, question marks over Renault. You know, are they running in a compromised state? And how much, in particular, were McLaren having to run in a compromised state, given it seems they've gone very extreme with their design, and they're perhaps right at the limits of heat. So we'll see from here. But for me, I would expect them to be in the battle for a fourth, fifth, maybe sixth with Renault and perhaps Haas.
It is really interesting because they set themselves such a seemingly narrow pathway to achieving a goal for this year, when we probably would have excused them pretty readily for being at around Renault's level, given they had to change their power unit quite late in the piece. And of course, it's a car that they're pushing to the limit and all that kind of thing. Whereas, do you feel like now, unless they can actually compete with Red Bull Racing, they've kind of written themselves off for failure in this year in that respect by saying that they should be at least there?
Yeah, that may have been over-optimistic.
I think probably that's the way it's going to be proved. You mentioned Haas there. We know Renault's been improving and it should be a step forward on last year, but Haas is a really fascinating one because they competed the second fewest laps of any team. And yet, and again under the radar, we should say, but all of a sudden in the wash-up, it seems like they're weirdly a very genuine dark horse for this season. Now, it doesn't mean competing for wins, but perhaps at the front of the midfield. Do you see that?
Yeah, I think dark horse is definitely the right term. They're the only small-budget team that I'd say might be ahead of one of the big-budget teams. They looked pretty competitive with Renault on various stints, sometimes a little quicker, sometimes a bit slower. So it's hard to know. You know, maybe if Renault turn the wick up, that leaves Haas behind them. And same goes for McLaren. But even still, I'd say they're looking pretty competitive for P6 early in the season. We'll see where things go from there. But for now, yeah, it's looking like a big improvement from last year for them.
Which is really interesting. I think it's interesting you say the small budget team perhaps ahead of two bigger ones in Renault and McLaren. Force India has typically played that role over the last couple of years. Last year was a very confident fourth place for them, despite being perhaps the smallest spending team in Formula One. This year, they had a very under-key pre-season testing, did Force India. We know that they're planning a very big upgrade for Melbourne, and they use the pre-season more to establish baseline data. But, I mean, what does that say for that idea of the small team that does really well in terms of Force India defining itself like that, when maybe Haas can actually do that? Because we haven't really seen that much from them in their first 2 years, other than just competent performances for a newcomer.
That's true. Although just competent is actually fantastic for a newcomer, given recent history.
To survive this far, really.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's surprising that Force India has gone so far backward. I thought if they were going to struggle, it would be last year when there was a major rule change, because that's when you would think a low-budget team would be up against it. But instead, it just feels like this year they've kind of fallen back while others have moved ahead. And much the same for Williams, who seemed to also be sort of slipping down the order at this point.
Yeah, and Williams is another interesting talking point, because this was meant to be another opportunity. I mean, really, every year is meant to have been another opportunity for them to try and recapture the pace to be competing perhaps in the top three. We know they managed that in the first two seasons of the new power regulations and haven't really since, and have only been slipping backwards. And this is the first car that Paddy Lowe's really been able to get his hands on, I suppose, even if he only arrived part of the way through last year. How disappointing do you find the performances that Williams were able to put in? And do you feel like that's, without obviously being there and seeing the drivers in action, but do you think maybe part of that is the fact that they've got two relatively new drivers who maybe can't provide the feedback or the testing data needed?
I mean, that may not help them in the position they're in, but I think you can turn that question around and ask how slow would they be without Stroll's money. So they're already operating on quite a small budget. They started 2014 with a major advantage with a power unit. And I think it was somewhat inevitable that as the other power units caught up, Williams were going to have to move backward. You know, they're operating on less than half of the budget of a team like Red Bull or Ferrari. So seeing them sustain a position ahead of them would be very difficult, unless they could gain major backing, e.g. from their own manufacturer. So, you know, it's maybe a little sad that they've slipped as far back as they have. I didn't necessarily expect them to go all the way toward the back of the midfield. But, you know, on a low budget, it is hard for teams to maintain top midfield or even challenging for podiums, I think.
Especially when we do get to even the second year of regulations, where the gains are smaller per dollar spent, and it's harder to keep up when, you know, Red Bull can spend all the money they like on a particular modification to a front wing, whereas you've really got to choose your battles in that sense as a smaller team. It does look like they've fallen all the way back towards the back, which is disappointing for Williams, considering the heritage, considering the trajectory they had. But one of, I suppose, the interesting packets of pre-season, perhaps the team we thought that would be filling that place that Williams is filling, was Toro Rosso, powered by Honda this year. Few people gave them any chance when the announcement was made late last season as well. There's been a lot of optimism since, though. They had an exceptionally reliable time, and after the first 4 days, they'd completed the most laps of any team, and they finished very close to the top. What can you glean performance-wise from Toro Rosso during the preseason? Is it all optimistic news for them? Is it reliability as well as performance, or are we just getting excited because the Honda didn't blow up at all?
That's definitely part of it. I think it was all pretty good news for them. I mean, definitely the reliability was unexpected. And I think their pace looks okay. I would say maybe P7 would be a reasonable guess for them. I don't think they're at a level to compete with Haas or Renault, perhaps. But I would definitely say they look at the moment quicker than Williams, probably quicker than Sauber, and probably on a similar level to Force India. So, you know, that's not bad given we believe they've now got the worst power unit in the car, at least going by last year, but perhaps Honda have made major strides.
And that'll be, I mean, a fascinating question throughout the year. A, if they can catch up after they've been trying to catch up for 3 years. And I note James Key from Toro Rosso said he reckons it can be done by the end of the season, perhaps even the middle of the season, depending on how much progress Renault makes. But then the questions that raises about what happened with McLaren if they had three seasons and it took a change of team for Honda to actually find this performance and reliability and general form. I mean, that for me is going to be the big question of this engine change switch, especially, and while it was a variety of circumstances that led to it, but as we said, McLaren had such a difficult time in preseason testing. I mean, you couldn't really ride it.
I mean, the question will be, was this inevitably going to come? Was Honda eventually going to get to this level? Or did they need to part with McLaren to make that step? And I don't know.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to find out. And of course, wouldn't it be, well, you know, it'd be interesting to have been a Ron Dennis or a Zach Brown if next year Honda powers Red Bull Racing to wins, probably over McLaren.
Exactly. I mean, it is worth noting, if you look at my end of season wrap-up from last year, the Honda was making big gains all across the season. If you look at the rate of improvement from first to last round, it was higher than it was in either of the previous 2 years. And there was the other interesting thing was between 2016 and 17, there was a big step backwards for Honda. So they were progressively improving across 2015, 2016, but then at the start of 2017, they were back at early 2015 levels of performance relative to Mercedes. So it was a huge step back. And I think that was the final straw for McLaren, going back to that level of, you know, complete, you know, inability to perform. But, you know, if you look at that trajectory across the season, if they were able to continue it, it looks very much as though they struck upon a new design in 2017 mm-hmm. and are now refining it.
Yeah, and certainly that'll be what Toro Rosso's hoping for, that they can extract only more performance rather than take any steps backwards. And like you say, I mean, 2016 as well was only moving forwards. So the progression should be able to be achieved. It's just a matter of perhaps patience that McLaren ran out of, rather.
Exactly.
It has set up a lot of great questions, the preseason for this season. If we sort of wrap up your preseason preview with a section at the end of your latest post, which is teammate predictions, which are very interesting. And they first of all, I mean, what's the system behind them? How are the teammates rated against each other?
Yeah, so one of the things I've developed on that blog is it's a mathematical model for ranking drivers and teams across F1 history. So basically I feed into the model all of the race results from 1950 to the present, and then we apply a statistical model that attempts to estimate the performance of the team and the driver separately. And the way it does that is it uses the fact that teammates tend to have similar machinery. So that gives some point of comparison, and the fact that drivers tend to move around and therefore have a network of different teammates. So pretty much all drivers are connected to one another in Formula One history via common teammates. And so that allows you to make estimates of both the driver and the team performances. And recently I've also added age and experience effects to that model. So it's now accounting for the fact that a driver early in their career tends not to perform at their highest level, nor do they when they're very young or very old. So I basically just applied that model, knowing previous estimates of each driver's performance, knowing how much variability there tends to be in their performance, or how much uncertainty in the current estimate, and then from that, what's the percentage estimate that they are going to beat their teammate next year?
And there are some really interesting numbers here. The least surprising one is just about 90% versus 10% for Vettel and Raikkonen. No one will be surprised by that. Probably not even Kimi Raikkonen, I think. there are a lot of interesting ones we could consider, but one of the ones I think I'd love to see if it was to transpire throughout the season as well is Carlos Sainz versus Nico Hülkenberg, and this system gives Sainz a 90% rating against Hülkenberg's 10. There are reasons to believe it, though, other than just the numbers, I think, isn't there? Because Sainz has, ever since he started with Max Verstappen as his teammate, has always been a little bit overshadowed, fairly and unfairly, I think. Whereas Hülkenberg's always had, and he's no young driver anymore, but this young upcoming driver tag. This could be the season that perhaps undoes Hülkenberg a little bit and puts him down into the, dare I say it, Heidfeld category.
Yeah, I mean, my gut feeling would not be 90-10. It would be maybe 60-40 for Sainz. The model is, as I say, it's sort of reliant on teammate interactions. So when you have sort of groups of teammates that don't really go outside of their own little clique, it's hard for the model to make reliable estimates. And that sort of happened with the Red Bull Junior Driver Program. You get drivers coming into Toro Rosso, and then they either go up to Red Bull or they leave the sport. You don't see them interacting with other teammates very much. So it's hard to actually assess the level of that cluster of drivers, so Verstappen, Sainz, and Ricciardo, relative to other drivers on the grid. And so I think this is going to be a critical comparison, actually, Sainz versus Hülkenberg. It's going to indirectly tell us a lot more about the hierarchy of the overall grid. You know, where does Vettel fit in? Where does Ricciardo fit in?
I mean, that is an interesting point as well, the fact that we very rarely get to rate Red Bull drivers outside of that environment. Really, Vettel is pretty much the first one. He was the first champion of that program, and he's only moved to one other team, and we'll wait and see if Ricciardo was to leave at the end of the year as well. But I think another one that you've noted here, or that the system's noted here as well, which I find interesting, and especially after last season, but I mean, it's based mostly on last season, I suppose, is Alonso versus Van Dorn, which the system predicts to be much closer than maybe people would expect at 54-46.
Yep, closer than I would have guessed. That's partly down to uncertainty. There's not much data on that comparison. As you say, it's just based on last season. But, you know, given Van Doorn's potential as a junior, I'm not sure it's that surprising. We should expect him to be a very strong driver in Formula 1 once he gets up to speed.
Yeah, and that's sort of what people thought last year, didn't they? And it's sort of, it's a little bit ironic that his results as a junior shouldn't be necessarily discounted if he has a bit of a difficult time starting in Formula 1, but it almost counts double against a junior who does really well in GP2 or whatever the series is and then struggles a little bit, isn't it? So we almost discounted Van Dorn twice last year despite him just being okay.
Yeah, exactly. And Charles Leclerc will have the same this year, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely, which will be fascinating for Sauber given they should be making a lot of progress this season. So there are a lot of really enticing questions to consider for this season. Hopefully the question that is resolved in the most positive way is Mercedes' advantage, and the answer is not as big as we thought. But
hopefully.
Hey, yep. You were right last year, so how much optimism can we have? So,
I'm okay to be wrong sometimes.
Well, we'll hope for everyone's sake that they only use soft tyres this year. We'll have to go with that. It's been very interesting to read your work over the pre-season, and doubly so to have a chat about it today. Thanks for joining us on the F1 Strategy Report, Andrew.
Thank you, Michael.
That was Andrew Phillips from f1metrics.wordpress.com. The F1 Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast. Make sure you get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you normally get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review to help other F1 fans find the show. You can also listen directly at f1strategyreport.com and stay up to date by finding us on Facebook and Twitter. My name's Michael Laminato. You can find me at Michael Laminato on Twitter. I'll catch you next week for a wrap-up of Round 1, the Australian Grand Prix.